The Jets elect not to snap it again. And the Patriots will head to the postseason with another first-round bye. They have clinched the number one seed as well for the seventh time overall since 1990.
That's Bob Soucy, the radio play-by-play voice of the New England Patriots. We're lucky to have him here with us on Season Ticket today. It is Friday, January 12th. I'm your host, Chris Gasper. As I mentioned, Bob Soucy in the house, those golden pipes. I'm a little nervous, Bob, because having to broadcast next to a professional such as yourself, I think people will see how feeble and ineffective at this job I really am. But that being said, thank you for joining us.
Well, Chris, thank you for having me. I'm flattered and honored and intimidated myself. I certainly don't have the vocabulary range that you possess. So this
that's just the written word. No, we are in your domain right now, Bob. That's the written word. Off the top of my head, I won't be pulling out those words, so you don't have to worry about that. Let's talk about this matchup the Patriots have on Saturday night against the Tennessee Titans in the AFC divisional playoffs. I think a lot of people are surprised that the Titans are the team that's coming here. Our good friend Dan Shaughnessy has referred to this as a double bye. I know the Patriots certainly don't look at it that way. How do you look at this matchup with the Tennessee Titans against the Patriots?
Well, I think you have to respect the fact that Tennessee did have to play, in essence, two playoff games. They had the play-in in the regular season finale versus Jacksonville, and then had to come back from 18 down on the road to Kansas City, and there was a certain value to developing a medal and being hardened by that experience. There are certainly a lot of qualities, it seems, in terms of leadership by quarterback Marcus Mariota. Plus, there's the physical skill set that I think can pose problems for the Patriots, the mobile quarterback, often proving to be problematic for New England's defense. A running back like Derrick Henry, if you are indeed to try to execute the game plan that so many profess going up against the Pats, run the ball, control the clock, keep Tom Brady on the sideline, who better than a back like Henry, who really doesn't have too much mileage, all things considered, this season, coming off 156 rushing yards, than a guy like Henry to try to do that. But then you have to take a step back as well, and you look at how the Titans got themselves in that position. They lost three straight before the Jacksonville game. They've had an offense that really has trouble scoring points, and I think it will be a tough test for the Pats. There's a lot of talent on that team. Defensively, you look at the number one picks that they have and their ability to exert pressure on the quarterback, especially inside. Not try to get too technical.
Yeah, Jarrell Casey, Bill Belichick has really lauded him this week.
Jarrell Casey's a big factor in this game. On top of that, they've shown a willingness to move some of their outside linebackers and ends inside, and that has been, I think, a formula to get to Brady, especially since Houston last year was able to exploit a weakness in the middle of the offensive line. Woodyard, the linebacker, is a guy the Patriots had their eyes on several years ago, leading tackler for the Titans. Secondary has the co-leader in interceptions this year in the NFL, Kevin Byard. I have a lot of respect for the qualities that Logan Ryan brings in terms of football culture and leadership. And I think less than giving his team any insight into the Patriot way that helps Tennessee, you know, maybe he just helps them avoid that awestruck factor
the
that
Patriot
seems to affect
mystique.
So many teams.
Yeah,
absolutely.
He can cut through that. And said, in fact, he said the other day down there that, you know, a big part of it for Tennessee is going to be, and I'm paraphrasing here, but you can't, if you're going to beat the Patriots, you can't walk in there and be intimidated.
Without question. And I don't think Tennessee will, because they do seem to believe, at least by the spoken word, that, you know, everybody else is counting them out, but they have a lot of confidence coming in. I'm just uncertain whether they have the offense to keep up, especially the problems. Their receiving core over the last two games, I think 25 targets, 12 catches combined for 100 yards receiving.
See, that's the type of great research you get from Bob Soucy. He really does his homework here. I was just going to say that, look, if they get down 21-3 against the Patriots, which is what they did against the Kansas City Chiefs on the road, I can't see them coming back. And I think it's strange to see a team come in here in the divisional round that allowed 36 touchdowns during the year and only scored 33.
Right.
You know, so they gave up more touchdowns than they scored, and it was a weird year for Mariota. He sort of took a step back, at least statistically. He had the 13 touchdown passes, but threw 15 interceptions. He was injured. I understand that with the hamstring, but still, he was inconsistent. So which Mariota are you going to get? I'll be honest, Bob, no disrespect to the Tennessee Titans, but I look at this and say this is a game the Patriots lose if they beat themselves, because I don't think the Titans are capable of beating them on their own. I think the Patriots would have to be complicit in their own demise to drop this game.
Without question. And you look at the success Kansas City had offensively in the first half with the tight end Travis Kelce before his injury, and we know Rob Gronkowski's history against the Pittsburgh defense. granted, recently versus Keith Butler's defense, but for a long period of time against Dick LeBeau. And when it comes to Mariota, one of the things that I noticed watching the game live is that he really struggled with any pass across the flats, right or left, you know, passes that were more of touch passes or to the outside. He missed a wide open Davis for what would have been a go-ahead touchdown before he hit Eric Decker down the middle. I wonder in this game if they try to employ more design running plays, get him on the move. He does seem to throw the ball better when he's active, rolling out of the pocket and trying to throw those little darts that he does, especially to a guy like Delanie Walker. But I'm with you, Chris. And the Patriots, look at the roster going into this game now. They seem to have the full complement of players.
Yeah, I was going
to
ask you about that.
100% practice attendance on Thursday. Players like Alan Branch and Kyle Van Noy back defensively. Van Noy off the practice report altogether. Chris Hogan off the injury report. That bodes well. Plus, the running back stable is close to full now with James White and Rex Burkhead progressing. And that's a huge factor. I really think the Patriots in the last quarter of the season were hamstrung literally and figuratively offensively because of the series of injuries, whether they were to Tom Brady himself or to a lot of the parts that were missing or at least compromised.
Yeah, I think Chris Hogan being back is a big one for them. He has that shoulder injury. They removed him from the injury report. And James White as well, who had the ankle injury, missed the last three games. Those two guys, I think, can sort of diversify that offense a little bit. It was a little bit of a struggle, as you mentioned, sort of down the stretch. Normally, the Patriots play their best football after Thanksgiving. I didn't think that was the case this year. What other areas of concern are there for you with the Patriots at this point, Bob? Are you concerned about the defense? We all know what happened the first four games of the year with the Patriot defense, but when you look at where they ended up at the end of the year here, they're one of the better defenses in the league when it comes to points allowed per game, and that's something that when you look at it, you think would bode really, really well for them in this game. Are you still concerned about that defense and giving up some yardage here and having some issues?
I am, Chris. You go back to the root of the problem early this year, lack of communication. They solved that for a while after some really egregious and uncharacteristic breakdowns on the back end defensively. But you get into a tight struggle in the postseason, and you wonder how are players who are new to this experience, like Stephon Gilmore, going to respond? Is a player like that going to revert to what proved his demise in the first part of the season, with the kind of breakdowns we saw against Carolina, for example, or even Kansas City, granted, in the season opener. And so I wonder, in a playoff setting, if it's a tight game, all it takes is one play to turn the outcome. And as much as we expect, I think many of us, the Patriots, to handle Tennessee with relative ease, still if it's a tight game and you get Mariota on the move and a play starts to break down and he makes an unscripted throw and somebody's out of position because they're reacting to what he's doing, well, that could prove to be the end of the season. So that's one of the things that I really go into this game concerned about, and more so the following week. And I still think of that catch and run by Juju Smith-Schuster at the end of the Pittsburgh game that should have set up the game-winning touchdown.
Yeah, I think having Van Noy back will be a big one, because I think it's an influx of talent at linebacker where obviously they're a little short. No Dante Hightower, no Shea McClellan. That's the amazing thing. Like, people are talking, and so you have Rob Gronkowski this postseason. You didn't have him last postseason. You still won the Super Bowl. But you don't have Julian Edelman. You don't have Dante Hightower. Those are two of your five best players. Yet, as we sit here, Bob, everybody basically says, well, the Patriots are the favorites to come out of the AFC. And you're looking at, so was there another team that would be missing two of their top five players? And people would just assume that they're going to not only get to the AFC title game, but in a lot of regards, get to the Super Bowl.
And Chris, think about the players who helped to key the comeback in the second half of Super Bowl 51. Dante Hightower makes the defensive play of the night, sparking that comeback offensively. Malcolm Mitchell, Chris Hogan, and the play of the night offensively by Julian Edelman. Yes, Rob Gronkowski's back. He wasn't available last year, but they got something out of Martellus Bennett. He had a big catch to set up a field goal in that game. So I look at the second half alone from Atlanta and then compare it to this season down the stretch for the Patriots, and there's an enormous difference, and it is amazing to me that despite the spoils of success we've enjoyed here, that this team went 13-3 and entered the playoffs with a number one seed.
Yeah, it's just incredible. It speaks to sort of the sustained success that Brady and Belichick have had, that people just have this expectation that as long as those two guys are there, the Patriots are the favorites. I want to ask you about, you mentioned sort of guys new to the Patriot playoff experience, and you mentioned Stephon Gilmore. I want to ask you about Brandon Cooks, because I feel like he's sort of a divisive guy, not in the locker room, but for fans. It's was this guy worth the first round pick they gave up? Can you count on this player? How do you look at his season as a Patriot? Are you disappointed with what he's done? Or do you look at a season with 1,082 yards and 7 touchdowns and say, well, that's what they got the guy for. He's a vertical threat. This is what he does.
Yeah, you know, it's a mix of both, frankly. And I think down the stretch, because they didn't have those other pieces, it's strange to say that a playmaker is a complementary piece. But I think when you look at the offense early in the season, that's what Brandon Cooks was. His strengths are suited to those longer routes, those big bending routes, or the kind of routes where he can use his speed and run through coverage and have separation. And often that's created by what the guys underneath are doing to attract the defense's attention. And so you take some of the players we've already mentioned out of the equation, and now it's Brandon Cooks trying to come back and win on routes that really don't suit his strength. He's a smaller guy. He doesn't necessarily go up and extend on those 50-50 balls the way that, you know, other receivers.
Although I'll say the one in Miami, second one in Miami, he's behind the defense there as on a deep ball, and Tom underthrows him. I understand people are saying fight for the football, but Brandon Cooks, to your point, Bob, has never been Randy Moss. He's not going to go up and jump a guy. And the fact is, he's 2 yards clear of the guy, and Tom throws it short. I don't understand how that interception is on Cooks, but I agree with your overall point. But I just think they put some interceptions on him this year, some plays where they're saying, oh, this is Cooks, he doesn't fight for the ball. It's like, fight for the ball? I'm open by 3 yards. Why don't you throw the ball to me where it's supposed to be, and it will just be a touchdown? Why do I have to come back and fight for it, Tom?
Well, you got to keep in mind, Chris, that I spend most of my time watching football next to a quarterback. So
I
think through osmosis, maybe, I've started to see the game somewhat through a quarterback's perspective when it comes to bias and such.
Yeah, I'm sure Zoe never threw an inaccurate pass in his life. It was always that, you know those quarterbacks, Bob. They're always saying, oh, you got to come back to the ball. You have to come back to the ball. You're not coming back to the ball on a post route when you're open by 3 yards and it's going to be a 75-yard touchdown. The guy's not coming back to the ball.
And can I quickly add, too,
yeah, sure.
Regardless of what we think, what the fans think, as you mentioned, inside the locker room, there's a lot of respect for Brandon Cooks and with head coach Bill Belichick. I think he's a teammate that's really ingratiated himself from day one with his work ethic and his humility in relative circles as a wide receiver and a guy who's had now 3 consecutive 1,000-yard seasons.
Yeah, and Belichick referenced his durability and availability, and the Patriots sort of have that saying, you know, whether it's durability or availability, that's more important than ability. So they love having this guy out there on the field. I know it's a mixed bag in some people's minds, but they're certainly going to need him in the playoffs. All right, we're going to take a brief time out here on Season Ticket, and then we're going to talk about Bob Soucy's specialty, drama. If there's one thing you think of when you think of Bob Soucy, it's drama, right? We're going to ask him how the drama playing out at Patriot Place between Robert Kraft, Bill Belichick, and Tom Brady could affect the Patriots in the playoffs. Stay tuned for that. Welcome back. If you like Season Tickets, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Remember, subscribing is the best way to make sure you get our latest episode as soon as it's available. All right, we're back now with Bob Soucy and his Golden Pipes. He is the voice of the New England Patriots Radio Network. You can hear him here in Boston on 98.5 The Sports Hub. So as promised, Bob, we're going to get to your specialty, drama. I think, you know, I've talked to Zoe a little bit, and I've been told you can be a little bit of a diva in the booth. So drama is your specialty, but we'll keep it to the Patriots drama. It was just last Friday that the Seth Wickersham story dropped, sort of a Patriots bomb that he dropped there about tension and strife between Tom Brady and Bill Belichick and Bill Belichick and Robert Kraft. Do you think this will affect the team in the playoffs?
Well, first of all, Chris, the real drama for Soucy occurs in the household. We try to get the kindergartner and second grader out the door to school on time.
Oh, I heard it was when there was a run on fruit in the Soucy household. The Soucy household is big on fruit, correct?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah, no question.
No fruit. And you turn, if there's no fruit, it's like he goes Bruce Banner to Incredible Hulk is what I've heard.
Well, no vein popping here from what I've seen with the players for the Patriots. In terms of their response, it's hard to tell this time of the year, first of all, because there is a sharper focus and there is that sense of urgency that I've noticed the last few years as well in being around this team. I did find it interesting that your colleague, Ben Volen, yesterday observed that Tom Brady was very serious in his press conference. And again, I'm not sure if that's a reflection of what was reported and the fallout from it, or the Tom Brady has the blinders on and he is especially focused and concentrated on this particular game against the Tennessee Titans. there's more media around the locker room this time of the year. It's harder individually to get close to players long enough or well enough to really try to get a gauge on what they're feeling and what they're thinking. I will say this, though, from day one for me, and I took over as the play-by-play announcer for the Pats after the summer of 2013, that this team has shown a remarkable capacity to compartmentalize what would be, you know, team-dividing potential distractions Jamie Collins trade. Aaron Hernandez, to start with, in my experience, Deflategate and the saga that unfolded really over the course of two seasons, in essence. And yet this team has soldiered on, and this team has continued to win. And I know a lot of people make this point. This team seems to seize on perceived slights or questions about their future, near, long term, and they tend to thrive off it. And I would be surprised if they don't do that again.
Yeah, it's sort of that bunker mentality, Bob. You're absolutely right about that. And it seems to sharpen their focus. They're able to tune out anything outside. You know, they have that mantra, ignore the noise, and they really do live by it. Have you noticed any tension just being around the team this year? Maybe more tension than usual between players or between two of the principals of this dynasty in Tom Brady and Bill Belichick?
I haven't, but we're not in practice. We're not in the locker room except for the 45 minutes that are available to the media most days during the week. And during that period, as you know, Chris, very few of those people are even within close proximity.
We'll say they're in and out. They're in and out, yes.
So, for us, most of the access revolving around Tom and Bill are in those podium sessions in the press conferences that everybody else can see online or on television live or on archive. So for me to say that I haven't seen any tension, that's not to say that there hasn't been any tension for the Patriots this year. But again, I think that there are always going to be little brush fires that the teams, especially as successful as this organization has been over as long a period of time as it's been, that they're going to have to deal with, put out, and move on from. I think in many ways, some of what the Patriots have experienced have made them better. Again, in this case, I think the concern is, in many respects, more long-term than the immediate future for this team in this playoffs. You wonder how the effect of a potential head coaching hire in New York or Detroit, say a Matt Patricia leaves, what happens with Josh McDaniels, how that affects the situation. A lot of concentric circles here, and they are somewhat related, but I'm not necessarily that they're all in line, that one leads to the other. I think there's a lot of things happening at the same time, and a lot of people are trying to put the various pieces together, connect all the different dots, and some of them are a bit random, some of them are connected. And ultimately, I don't think we're going to know the answers to all of our questions for another couple of years.
Here's what I think. That story obviously was interesting. It was intriguing. It was juicy. But the reality is, the stuff that Seth was talking about, and Seth's a great reporter, but that stuff had happened in the past in terms of throughout the season while they were going 13-3. So they were dealing with this and still going 13-3. So I don't think it will affect them. Maybe that's naive on my part, but that's the way I feel.
And can I say this, too, with regards to some of what he wrote, the characterizations, for example, of Bill Belichick being furious and demoralized? I will say this, from what we've seen this year, I can't detect any demoralization for Bill Belichick. He seems to be the same passionate, driven coach that was here in 2000 when he tried to reshape this organization and has been here throughout. So, and also I would say this, too, that I'm not sure Bill confides fully in anyone outside of a very small circle of people. So I think you might have a lot of people that think they have an idea, even some on the inside, who aren't necessarily true insiders, so to speak, who maybe express their thoughts on the situation, try to read into it, and project down the road. And I think they're speculating in many cases like the rest of us.
You know what is the ultimate cure for drama is winning, and the Patriots have done that. And I would say another cure for the Patriots drama would be a Dick LeBeau defense. They have carved this guy up, and he's a great coach. Don't get me wrong. He really is fantastic. Hall of Fame defensive back. Great coach. I know they have a lot of respect for him, but Dick LeBeau, defensive coordinator for the Tennessee Titans, was with the Pittsburgh Steelers before. Alex Speer here of the Globe had a great story breaking down the success the Patriots have had and Tom Brady has had against Dick LeBeau and his defenses. And if you look at the last nine games against a Dick LeBeau defense, the Patriots are 7-2. They're averaging 32.6 points per game in those contests. Brady has thrown 23 touchdowns in just three interceptions while completing 68% of his pass attempts. He hasn't thrown an interception in any of his last five games against a Dick LeBeau orchestrated defense. Do you think any of that changes on Saturday evening? Will Dick LeBeau switch it up? There was the one year, I think it was 2011, where he did switch it up and they were able to beat Tom when LeBeau was with Pittsburgh. All of a sudden they played all this man defense. Mm-hmm. Obviously the Steelers game, Keith Butler switched it up until the key drive when he decided to send Mike Hilton on a zone blitz. I mean, these guys just can't help themselves sometimes with the zone blitz. But do you think that anything will change in regards to Tom Brady and the Patriots versus a Dick LeBeau defense?
Well, you have to think that he's going to try some new things. But on the other hand, does he have the personnel to do what those Steelers of 2011 or more recently what the Houston Texans were able to do last year in getting after Brady with tight coverage on the corners? Adoree Jackson, first-round pick, guy with top-end speed, but I wasn't impressed by him. Now, granted, he was trying to cover Tyreek Hill early last week. Logan Ryan, I have a lot of respect for him. Smart, solid player. But again, not a shutdown cornerback by any stretch. And then there's always the problem. How do you deal with Rob Gronkowski? Do they put Cyprian on him? Do they put Beyer, the other safety, of course, with all the interceptions on him? Do they use a combination of people? And that's going to affect what you do with the other 10, or if you put two guys on Gronkowski, nine defenders in this case.
Yeah, and I'd say two things about that Houston game last year. Well, maybe even more than two, to be honest. But one, you have a situation where it's Mike Vrabel and Romeo Crennel. They understand that offense and the way Tom Brady thinks. Another aspect to that was there's no Rob Gronkowski. So that made it a little bit easier for the Texans to devise the plan they had. You don't have to worry about Gronk shredding you through the middle. The other piece of it is they had great cornerback play, which you alluded to. You know, A.J. Boye was on that team at the time, and they had really strong cornerback play. And I don't see the same thing with the Titans. I like Adoree Jackson. I like Logan Ryan. They like this kid, Ty Smith, who they said has really stepped up for them the second half of the year. But from a coverage standpoint, I don't know if those are guys, even if Dick LeBeau were to switch from his M.O. and play a lot of man, I don't know if that's conducive to the Titans having success. They might have to play zone by default. And if you put Tom Brady against a zone defense, he's going to find the holes.
No question about it. And I thought there were open receivers last week for Kansas City throughout. Now, they may not have the same defensive game plan. You have to take that into account. But Alex Smith, I thought, played well in that game, all things considered. He was betrayed by his receivers in a lot of cases. So there were people that were open that didn't make plays for him. Now, granted, again, it's not the same offense, but the ability to try to shut down this Patriots offense, especially if the Pats are at or at least close to full strength with Gronkowski in the mix, that's an extremely tall order.
I want to ask you about a guy who has become something of an obsession for me. It's probably unhealthy, Bob. But Malcolm Mitchell, just because I have so much respect for what he did in that Super Bowl, I feel like he doesn't get enough credit for what he did in Super Bowl 51. He really bailed them out in the second half with his ability to beat man coverage. So he missed two practices this week, but he was out on the field on Thursday. He's the last guy they can have come off IR. Do you think we see him in terms of the playoffs? Not even this game, but do you think we see him this year if they're able to advance?
I hope so, because I'm with you. I think he was a player that sparked that comeback last year. He was able to help the Patriots offset what was troubling them with Atlanta's defense in the middle of the field with that Robert coverage congesting things across.
Look at you, Robert coverage.
Well, I've heard it so often of late, and don't ask me to explain or define it, but in essence, putting an extra defender to muddy the middle. And they started to throw to the outside, those quick slants to Malcolm Mitchell, those comeback routes. He's got great hands. He made plays. He's also strong. He's slight of frame, but he's a strong receiver. He catches those contested balls. And I think having Malcolm Mitchell available to them down the stretch would be extremely valuable for the Pats to get to where they want to go.
In terms of getting to where you want to go, I know sometimes on the radio broadcast that's difficult for you to do, working with one Scott Zolak, who we both love. In all seriousness, though, what is it like working with Zoe? And do you have any good off-the-air Zoe stories?
Well, none that I can share, okay, I think, with this audience. Although I will say this, it's been a blast with Zoe from day one, on and off the air. And I think other people have remarked about this, that there was, if not an instant chemistry, then a very quickly developing chemistry.
Absolutely.
And probably because we're polar opposites.
Yeah.
So I think two things for me is Zoe helped me feel like I belonged in the booth in the first place. Day one, Philadelphia, before the preseason opener, we're about to go on the air, And Zoe turns to me, and I'm nervous, of course. I'm going to follow the great Gil Santos, who's still a legend of mine, still the voice of the Patriots in football in New England for me. And Zoe turns to me and says, "Hey, Bob, don't F this up." Hello, everybody. Welcome to Lincoln Financial Field. So, and you know how Zoe is.
He can be very blunt.
Absolutely. So that set the tone and made me, you know, made me chuckle, helped me feel at ease a bit, and from day one made me feel like I belonged in the booth. And I think the other part of it is because of our broadcast dynamics and because it's so different than Gil and Gino, that's helped gain acceptance with the audience at large. If we were to sound similar to Gil and Gino, we'd be poor imitations. But because this is such a different broadcast, you know, I'm more the nuts and bolts guy and try to be the counterweight to Zoe. And with his passion, his enthusiasm, and I think often overlooked because of those other two qualities, his insight and analysis, he sees the game
He's
as
incredible.
Well as any color commentator, I think, in the business.
I completely
agree
with you.
Terrific at breaking down a game. And so I think that's helped it work.
No, you're so right. And, you know, Zoe does not get enough credit for that. Because to be able to see the things that he sees live, it's amazing. I mean, it's easy for a lot of people to go back. You know, someone like myself who doesn't know a ton about football and you know, Ben Volen, who's very good at the breakdowns, to look on NFL Game Pass and go back and see it. But Zoe can see it live, you know, which is amazing to me. And he has so much energy and so much passion. And it really comes through. He also has a clear passion for the Patriots. I would say he would not fit into the category of objective broadcaster.
Not objective, but I will say this. He's not afraid to criticize the Pats. As much as, you know, he loves Tom Brady as a player, Zoe will say that's a poor thrower. I don't know what he was thinking on that. Zoe will criticize Patriots players when they make mistakes, and he will also criticize the opposition when they don't do something that could beat the Patriots, as in the case of Darrell Bevell and Pete Carroll and the Seattle Seahawks in the immediate aftermath of the Malcolm Butler interception when he railed on Seattle for its play calling and not
That's
handing
true.
The ball off to Marshawn Lynch. So I think although, you know, we're not objective by any stretch, there is a clear lens through which we watch the games. We are definitely the Patriots broadcasters. We definitely get a lot more excited about the Pats. But at the same time, I think Zoe is objective in his analysis of the game. And he will criticize calls by the officials that go against the Patriots, but he will also say when they catch a break because of an official's ruling.
So we know Zoe's sort of theme song is Josie, and obviously the whole stadium goes nuts. What kind of music do you like, Bob? What would be the wow. Bob Soucy theme song?
That is a great question. It's a pretty eclectic mix, honestly.
Okay.
Yeah, I've even gone so far as to listen to Flo Rida.
Oh, there we go.
You know, welcome
like
to my
that.
House. Again, having heard it first at a football stadium. But I will say this, that nothing on my list of favorites will likely make it into the rotation post-Super Bowl championship the way Josie and the outfield did after Super Bowl 49 when we're in the University of Phoenix Stadium and all of a sudden the Patriots are celebrating and confetti's falling and they're ready to hand off the Lombardi trophy to Belichick and Brady and we hear the outfield. Thanks to Scott Zola.
Thanks to Zola. He has a cult following. He's great. I would say this. If you had a theme song, and I'm impressed that you mentioned Flo Rida, if you had a theme song, I would say it would be Kendrick Lamar Humble, because you are one of the most humble and self-effacing people in the Boston media, and it's one of the things that I love about you. And I want to end it on this, Bob. Can you just tell people, what's your process to prepare for a game? Because I think people might not understand. They think, you know, to some degree, you and Zoe just kind of show up. But much like Bill Belichick prepares during the week, you do a ton of preparation, and I've seen you in the booth in terms of your color-coded charts and all the stuff you have. You know, the great calls that you have, they don't just happen. There's a lot that goes into being prepared for that moment.
There's a lot you give up in some respects, but it's a labor of love. And when I say give up, it means, you know, a real life outside of family and the job. And I say that, because that's the life I've chosen, and not to say that it's work again. I can't stress that enough. I mean, there are more people that put more time into their fantasy football teams than I do into our broadcast, frankly, in terms of research and preparation. But yeah, it's an ongoing process, Chris. After a game, you try to process what just took place. You know, you go through the box score and the stats like everybody else. Eventually, you get around to watching at least some video, if not all the video from the game. You try to get a finger on the pulse of the NFL. One of the challenges is there's such a large volume of information on the NFL that it's hard to wade through it all and try to glean what's important, what's essential to a broadcast. So you start again from really reviewing the previous game, and it really begins that night, sometimes on the airplane, coming back from a road contest.
You and Brady breaking down that video, huh, Bob?
Yeah, and Bill.
On the flight back.
Let's not leave out Bill. Absolutely. Yeah, and clicker in my hand. Bill, I want to see that play again. No, Tom, stop it right there. You should have done this. But yeah, so you go from there, and just as the week goes on, it's reading newspaper stories, now online stories, and the various websites. It's assembling all the information from those sources, as well as processing what the teams produce. I think that the Titans for this game had like a 300-page, and that may be understating it, press release.
Yeah,
so you go through all the notes about player trends and team history, and you try it again, highlight, and eventually transfer that on to what I call my spotter boards. They're big poster boards that have little boxes for every player, and it has all the vitals, height, weight, year, where they were drafted, how they were acquired, etc., and some nuggets about their careers and maybe the recent play. And over the course of a week, that information gets transferred from websites in your notes to the spotter charts, and then beyond that, you try to go in the locker room and hear what people say, talk to players, listen to the coaches, ask some questions in the press conference, and talk to your colleagues. You know, like you, I do a podcast for the Patriots website. Obviously, it's Patriots-centric, but spend a lot of time with opposing teams, reporters, and broadcasters, and so you get some good nuggets there. Talking to Patriot players, trying to get their insights on the upcoming game and some of the strengths and weaknesses. Usually, they're only going to talk about the strengths, if not all the time, only talk about the strengths of the opposition. And again, by the end of the week, it somehow comes together. But never do I consider it work. I love doing it. It is more challenging these days, as I say, because of the volume of information. And with two young kids, you know, I don't spend as much time as I might have in the past. But every minute's worthwhile. I love it.
You can hear all that hard work that you put into the broadcast. And I know it's enjoyable for a lot of people. And you're a big part of a lot of people's fall and winter and their football Sundays. And you'll be a big part of their football Saturday on the call of the Tennessee Titans versus the New England Patriots at Gillette Stadium. That is the one and only Bob Soucy, voice of the New England Patriots. Bob, thanks for coming in on Season Ticket.
Chris, thanks so much. I enjoyed it.
Well, that's it for this edition of Season Ticket, a production of the Boston Globe and WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Every Friday, we like to take a moment and thank the people who make this podcast possible. Season Ticket is produced by Steve Safran, Josh Schwartz, Scott Thurston, Joe Sullivan, John Parati, Paul Vikas, Jessica Alpert, Matt Reed, and our intern, Brendan Coughlin. I'm Chris Gasper. Have a great weekend. We'll catch you on Monday.